In the immortal words of Judy Brown, happiness is a choice. And it's easy to get happy on a free-for-all football Friday. I'm getting ready to head off to Nashville for Texas Vanderbilt, another ranked matchup, back-to-back ranked matchups for the Longhorns. Last week, the whole world was in Austin. This week, they're going to under construction Vanderbilt Stadium, whose stadium, First Bank Stadium, 39,790 capacity. But I noticed during the Vanderbilt Alabama game, they've got some construction going on. So I've never been to First Bank Stadium in Nashville. I'm very eager to check it out. I'm going to be making a lot of first-time trips in the SEC, which is exciting for this old dog to learn some new tricks. First Bank Stadium's one of them. And Vanderbilt. And it's funny because my man, Eric Henry, my colleague at horns247.com, he and I do a podcast together called the Flagship Podcast. Y'all should check that out. It's on Spotify, iTunes, wherever. You can check it out also on the Horns247 YouTube channel. But my man, Eric Henry, did a story going into the Georgia game on the seven pressing questions facing the Longhorns going into their top five showdown with Georgia. We know how that turned out. But it seems like all the same questions are still facing Texas. Question number one was, will Quinn Ewers rebound? Well, we know how that turned out. He got benched for the first time in his 2.5 seasons with Steve Sarkisian. And that's where we'll start. Steve Sarkisian on Thursday gave he said Quinn Ewers has had a good week of work, that he seems dialed into the game plan, and that he looks forward to Ewers going out and performing at a high level. And, you know, I've talked to sources behind the scenes who say it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell how much Ewers is improved from the last 2 weeks. So we have to wait and see. We have to see how this goes. Obviously, the abdominal strain is a tricky one for a quarterback because you're constantly rotating your torso. And I'm told that that crazy hip thruster motion that Dak Prescott does in warmups is in part to, you know, keep the oblique stretched. But Quinn Ewers, what a huge game this is for Quinn Ewers, because Quinn Ewers now has people questioning. You know, he's a Heisman front runner. He's dialing it up for Texas in the UTSA game, and then he goes down with his injury and he's out 2.5 games. When going into the UTSA game, he's a Heisman Trophy front runner, and then he goes down, and coming out of the game, Arch Manning had better Heisman Trophy odds than Quinn Ewers. And it was just weird. Like, his whole world kind of went upside down. And then he comes back against Oklahoma and he's off. He's 20 of 29 passing, but 10 of those passes were behind the line of scrimmage or screen passes. So it was 20 of 29 for 199 yards. It wasn't like he was throwing downfield. He really wasn't. And then against Georgia, who knows how things might have gone if Quintravian Wisner catches the pass from Ewers where it's a foot race to the end zone, but that didn't happen. And what happened happened, and he got benched with 4:43 left in the second quarter. Arch Manning comes in, and then Arch didn't really get anything going, although he had a 5-play drive and a 6-play drive. Quinn Ewers had just gone 3 and out. But then Ewers comes back in the third quarter, and he's good. He's 7 of 10, 90 yards, 2 touchdowns. Texas cuts Georgia's 23-0 lead at halftime to 23-15, and you're thinking, okay, there's time. There's time for Texas to get back into this thing, and they just couldn't connect the dots. They just couldn't block Mykel Williams or Jaylen Walker. They just couldn't keep those dudes from completely disrupting everything. Damon Wilson, number 10, he got some licks in there. Daylon Everett, the corner who had the strip sack and the interception. So Texas goes down. I will continue to sing the praises of the Texas defense. I know Georgia, you know, scoring 30 points, it seems like the Texas defense got run, but they really didn't. Some guys had some really good games in there, including Andrew Makuba, who's probably, well, he is listed as doubtful now with his knee injury, but, you know, he has that interception and, you know, Jahdae Barron has 2 interceptions and Alfred Collins was in the backfield. Baron Sorrell was in the backfield. Anthony Hill was everywhere. David Benda had a couple good pops in there. So, Jermaine Lole, man, what a game from Jermaine Lole, the seventh year transfer from Louisville, who was a big part of the Louisville run defense last year that ranked 9th in the country. Jermaine Lole had 6 tackles in the Georgia game. He's an interior defensive lineman. Like that's big time. And so there were dudes who had good games and deserve some recognition. But you know, the offense is under construction. So that's the first pressing question from that article going into the Georgia game. Was will Quinn Ewers rebound? We're still asking that question. And the Vanderbilt defense is good against the run, only giving up 116 yards per game on the ground. That's only 12 more yards per game on the ground than Texas has given up right now. So the way to beat Vanderbilt is to throw it, just like they did against Michigan. This is going to be a very similar type test. I'm not going to put Vanderbilt's defense on par with Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant and Josiah Stewart, but you get the point. They're good against the run. They're vulnerable against the pass. They've given up a lot of explosive play touchdowns. I wrote this down. Hopefully it's somewhere handy. These are the explosive play touchdowns Vanderbilt has given up. 62-yard touchdown pass to Virginia Tech, 33-yard touchdown pass, 25-yard touchdown pass, both to Georgia State. Georgia State beat Vanderbilt, by the way. 20-yard touchdown pass, 25-yard touchdown pass by Missouri against Vanderbilt. Bama had a 58-yard touchdown pass against Vanderbilt. Kentucky had a 22-yard touchdown pass. Ball State did not have an explosive play touchdown, and neither did Alcorn State, who Vanderbilt pummeled 55-0 earlier this year. So you want to get to the Vanderbilt defense. And, you know, kudos to the Texas defense, by the way, giving up only 1 touchdown pass in 7 games. 1 touchdown pass given up by the Texas defense in 7 games. That is stout. Okay, question number 2 for the Longhorns. This was an article my man Eric Henry wrote for Horns 24/7 going into the Georgia game. This question also still applies. Will the Longhorns be able to establish the run? So, you know, Steve Sarkisian, he's had a 1,000-yard rusher almost every year he's been a head coach or offensive coordinator, and it's been totally by committee this year. You know, last year you had Jonathan Brooks. I thought Jaden Blue would emerge as the lead guy, and he did, but he couldn't hold on to it. Literally, he fumbled it away against Mississippi State. So now you've seen Quintrevion Weisner start last game against Georgia and end up with 15 carries for 52 yards. Jaden Blue did not get a single carry, but was the leading receiver in the game for Texas. So I got to think that that changes a little bit. I think you have to sort of mix some carries in there for Jaden Blue and let him prove to you that he's a more trustworthy back in terms of ball security. But Texas, you know, was credited with 27 carries for 29 yards. That's not an accurate picture of Texas's running game, because all of the yardage from the 7 sacks in college football is deducted from the run total. Somebody help me with that. In the NFL, it's deducted from the passing total of the quarterback. So the sack adjusted rush rate for Texas was 4.4 yards per carry, thanks in large part to a 21-yard scramble by Arch Manning. So Texas hardly established the run against Georgia. And can they do it against Vanderbilt? I mean, Steve Sarkisian pretty much all year has been throwing to set up the run. He gets his quarterback going early with the RPOs, the screens, and then a deep shot. He's mixing the run in, obviously, and then in the second half, Texas tends to rely on its running game, usually with a nice lead, like they had in their last true road game at Michigan, a 24-3 lead at halftime. And then they just kind of ran the ball and ran out the clock in the second half. But with Quintrevion Weisner probable, you could see Jarek Gibson, the freshman, along with Jaden Blue, if you're trying to minimize carries for Quintrevion Weisner. But something tells me Weisner will be wanting to contribute as much as he can. But Texas still needs to establish the run on a consistent basis. Did not happen against Georgia. Question number 3 going into the Georgia game, will Texas be able to pressure the quarterback? And, you know, going into the game, Texas was sixth in the nation in total sacks, and 8th in sacks per game. And Texas was able to pressure Carson Beck into a couple of, you know, questionable decisions, but only 1 sack and only 4 tackles for loss for Texas in that game. And we know that Georgia finished with 7 sacks and 10 tackles for loss. 7 sacks by Georgia. And Texas had given up just 6 sacks through 6 games. So that's a little bit on the offensive line, but this is going to be a different kind of game, this game against Vanderbilt, because they want to run, and Diego Pavia knows exactly how to run this offense. And if you don't have proper leverage and technique against this guy, he's going to get 4 yards, 5 yards, and that's all he cares about. He wants to get into 2nd and short, 3rd and short, and that way they have the ability to run it or play action, and they lull you to sleep. They run, and then boop, they throw one over your head for a touchdown. And that's what Texas has to guard against for sure. This Texas defense has been so good. I think they'll be able to, but you got to get Diego Pavia onto the ground. You got to be disruptive. You've got to be assignment sound. You've got to swarm him. In talking to the coaches who faced Diego Pavia on Wednesday, Eli Drinkwitz, Mark Stoops, and Kalen DeBoer at Alabama, Mark Stoops said, you've got to get hats around this guy. You got to get multiple people around him because he breaks arm tackles. How will the Longhorns fare in the red zone? That was one of the questions from my man, Eric Henry, going into the Georgia game. And I'm talking about how some of these same questions faced Texas going into the Vanderbilt game. And Texas was 2 of 3 in the red zone. And, you know, both touchdowns. And of course, they had the, they ran out of downs at the end of the game when they had reached Georgia's 11. So that's why they were 2 of 3. Texas still, you know, doing well in terms of the conversion of red zone trips to touchdowns. And that's, you know, that's what you gotta have, because it's the reason that Texas has been averaging the, you know, the point total that it has. And you look at, where Texas is in terms of the red zone conversions, they dropped a little bit. 36 red zone trips, 31 scores, 28 of them touchdowns. So now Texas's touchdown conversion rate in the red zone is 77.8%. And that is 9th in the country. It is the highest touchdown conversion rate in the red zone in the SEC. Texas is 9th, and Alabama is tied for 12th. So Texas has been good in the red zone and needs to continue with that trend. And again, Texas only has given up one touchdown pass all season. So a lot of the same questions that are facing Texas going into the Georgia game continue to face them going into the Vanderbilt game. And look, let me make this clear. Texas losing to Georgia was expected going into the season. This is a game that does not hurt Texas at all. Like, losing to Georgia, the top program in college football the last 3 years, that's what was expected going into the season. So, yeah, Texas ended up being a favorite in the game, but losing that game did absolutely nothing to hurt Texas. Now, it gives them a conference loss, which makes things interesting, because we've got a game this weekend that I think every Texas fan is going to end up tuning into, with Texas and LSU playing in College Station. And these two teams have yet to lose in conference play. And so at 6:30 on Saturday night, A&M, a slight favorite at home against LSU. And you look at the standings, and you know, there's Texas A&M and LSU sitting atop the standings, and you're like, okay, well, you know, go, go, go LSU. Well, careful, because you kind of want, and I'm not going to tell you how to feel, but if you want Texas to control their own destiny in terms of getting into the SEC championship game, maybe you don't care, then you probably want A&M to win this game, because Texas doesn't play LSU. And LSU's remaining schedule after A&M is Alabama in Baton Rouge, at Florida, home against Vanderbilt, home against OU. LSU is going to be favored in each of those four remaining games after facing Texas A&M, which would mean if LSU beats A&M and then wins its next four, it is the only undefeated team in conference play and is absolutely in the SEC championship. And if A&M beats LSU and then Texas beats A&M, then Texas has the tiebreaker against the Aggies, and they have the tiebreaker. They would have the tiebreaker against LSU because they would have a win over an opponent that LSU lost to. So I know that's a little bit confusing, but that's probably what you want. If you're Texas and you're trying to get into the SEC championship game, you probably want, you definitely want A&M to beat LSU so that it's not a potential winner-take-all between the Aggies and Longhorns to get into the SEC championship. The tiebreakers are going to come into play. Georgia wins out. Georgia's got to play. Georgia's got remaining games against Tennessee and Ole Miss. They're at Georgia's off, and then they'll play Florida on November 2nd. Then they're at Ole Miss. Then they're home against Tennessee. They play UMass, and then they play Georgia Tech to close it out. So maybe a little bit of danger in there for Georgia against Ole Miss and Tennessee, but if Georgia keeps playing like they did against Texas, they're going to be just fine. And then A&M plays LSU. Then they go to South Carolina. South Carolina's been playing good football. South Carolina's defense is right up there with A&M's defense. And A&M also goes to Auburn and then faces Texas in the regular season finale. So interesting times, no doubt. Interesting times. That is the marquee game in the SEC this weekend is LSU at A&M. One other thing I find a little bit fascinating, because I've said for years, great coaches reveal themselves within 3 years. And, great coaches reveal themselves within 3 years on a job. And or championship coaches, however you want to say it. And Steve Sarkisian won a conference championship in his third year. And look at Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly, in his third year at Central Michigan, won the MAC championship, the first MAC championship in school history at Central Michigan. His third year at Cincinnati, he led the Bearcats to their first 12-0 regular season and an appearance in a New Year's Six Bowl, the Sugar Bowl. In his third year at Notre Dame, he was in the national championship game against Alabama, lost, but he was in the national championship game. And now in his third year at LSU, he's 6-1 and can – the one loss is to USC in a game that was back and forth and exciting and now looks like a bad loss, but it wasn't a conference loss, so LSU is in good position. And again, you've got a bunch of teams that could be subject to tiebreaker and common opponents and wins over common opponents, margins of victory over common opponents. That will all get sorted out at a later date. But Brian Kelly is trending in the right direction at LSU. And two guys to keep an eye on in that Texas A&M LSU game. For A&M, Nick Skorton, number 11 on their defense, 6'4", 285. He looks like the Georgia dudes that were, you know, the Mykel Williams and Jalen Walker who were tormenting Texas the other night. Nick Skorton, he's number 11 for A&M. He had 10 sacks at Purdue last year. He's from Bryan, like, you know, Bryan College Station, but he didn't get offered by the Aggies. And he goes off to Purdue, plays 2 years there. He's 10 sacks as a sophomore. He's got 4.5 sacks this year. That dude is going to be playing on Sundays. And then one of the more interesting stories to me about LSU right now is this sophomore linebacker named Whit Weeks. So Whit Weeks comes in. He's a, you know, sophomore. He wears number 40. And he's kind of taken over where Harold Perkins was. And he is killing it. Like, he's a tackling machine. He had 18 tackles in that overtime win over Ole Miss. He had 9 tackles against Arkansas last week in the 34-10 win at Arkansas, by the way. And, you know, that's, I'm just saying, he's fun to watch because he's everywhere. And Whit Weeks, I'm just telling you, that dude is that dude's impressive. And I'm looking at the little starts by position. And, you know, Perkins is hurt, I guess, but Weeks has replaced him at the weak side linebacker position, and he's been a monster. So just pointing that out. Watch for him, the sophomore. He is he's solid, to say the least. All right, so as we wind it down here, let me give you my thoughts on this game. Who knows? You're waiting for Quinn Ewers to re-elevate to elite Quinn Ewers. Like I've been saying all week, if Quinn Ewers plays the way he did at Michigan, when he was 24 of 36 passing, 246 yards, 3 touchdowns, no turnovers, then Texas is going to win this game just like they won that game. If they can, you know, get their passing game going, get it going early, get those quick starts that Texas has been so good at, then they're in rhythm, they're in sync, and they're back to being the most explosive offense in college football. If they get off to another slow start, it would be really problematic because this is the one team you don't want to get into or get off to a slow start against. Diego Pavia has 1 interception and 1 fumble the entire season. Like, he takes care of the football. Vanderbilt, they don't, you know, they're very efficient. They're very efficient in how they operate their offense. And, you know, in, they're tied for 17th in turnover margin. They're excellent on third down. I think we've talked about that. It's the marquee matchup of this game. Vanderbilt is 8th in all of college football in converting third downs 52.1% of the time. And Texas's third down defense is 10th in the country, only allowing 28.8% of third down conversions. So whoever wins third down is going to be a big tell in this game. Special teams, I'll give the edge to Vanderbilt because they've got a better punting average. They've got a better punt return average. They are penalized quite a bit, 60 yards per game in penalties. That's 87th in the country. Texas is giving, you know, back 50 yards in penalty yardage each game. That's gone up each week. Now it's, you know, 52nd in the country. And, you know, both teams are pretty darn good in the red zone. So Vanderbilt is number 6 in college football in red zone offense. So you just have to surround Diego Pavia, discourage him. Don't let him get into rhythm throwing the football. He doesn't throw it a ton, but when he does, he makes it count. And you know, Vanderbilt hogs the ball. We talked about this earlier in the week. They average 33 minutes per game of possession time, and that is 11th in the country. So they hold the ball. They play keep away. They grind you down. They try to wear your defense out. And Texas's defense has played a lot of football and has had to play a lot of high-level football. I expect them to keep doing it because they were given very little hope in that Georgia game until the third quarter, when they were already down 23-0 with very little sign of life from the Texas offense. So those are the key numbers that you need to know going into this game. But like I said, if Quinn Ewers is Michigan Quinn Ewers, Texas probably covers. This line keeps going up. It opened at 18, Texas by 18. It went to 18.5, and now it's at 19. So, you know, look, Texas has more talent. They have more firepower. They should win this game by at least 2 scores. I have to think that this team has had its manhood challenged, and it's going to come out on fire. This team's been really good on the road, 8 straight wins in true road games. So, my prediction, Texas 38, Vanderbilt 17. All right. There you have it. There you have it, kids. Who's excited? All right. We like to wind things down here with a Sean Adams thought for the day. Sean Adams, my man, my co-host for 7 years on the radio, my brother from another mother. He would put thoughts for the day out on his Instagram. They are still there. This Sean with one S. This thought for the day comes from October 3rd, 2016. If you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. Stretch yourself and always be learning. Don't get comfortable. If you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. Stretch yourself and always be learning. Don't get comfortable. Thanks, everybody, for listening to episode 44. Of First Down with Chip Brown. Hope you're enjoying it. Tell your friends and enemies. And we will be back on Monday to recap everything that we learn and see over the weekend. Until then, as my man Sean Adams would say, the dream is free. The hustle is sold separately. Go to work. Peace.